Hello. In today's installment of our podcast series, we will be discussing veterans' well-being and the impact of COVID-19. I would like to introduce Walida Bennett, the founder and director of the Multi-Faith Veterans Initiative housed at DePaul University and former Global Alliance Recognition honoree. Walida, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Maybe we'll begin with if you can tell us a little bit about the Multi-Faith Veterans Initiative.
Well, the Multi-Faith Veteran Initiative was an initiative that started back in 2014. It was in direct response to the escalation of death by suicide rates among veterans, in which my family and I were personally impacted, and really began to kind of think about what the larger community role was in transition issues of veterans. I come out of a military family, so I've always been around the military, and as a young child, really had a firsthand perspective on the impact that war has on young men. And, you know, obviously then I was a lot younger, but really began to understand the trauma that was impacted on these young men as they were engaged in wars that either they did not sign on to, or but because of our global interactions. And I just felt that when veterans leave and they come back to the communities that they left. So do we not have an obligation and a role to help in their transitions, with also how do we receive them back into the community so that they can begin to transition into a new stage of their life? And that's why the Multi-Faith Veteran Initiative was started, primarily to engage the faith community, because we work primarily with veterans of color, and those are the institutions that we have in our communities that could provide a space that was non-threatening and a space that they could come into to just connect with one another, and then out of that, connect to the various resources and services that were accessible to them within the community.
Thank you. So, can you explain to us how COVID-19 has impacted your programming?
Wow. Let's start by saying that in March, we were in the process of launching a major initiative to focus on women vets. And the night before the convening, we received a communication from the university stating that all public events would be canceled for the rest of the quarter, because DePaul is on quarters. But not only that, that the university basically was shutting down, that students need to make preparations to move out of their dorms, that finals and midterms exams were being transferred to online. And we scrambled all night to get out the communication so that, you know, the 100 plus people that we had coming, including some of our top local officials, would not show up. Fast forward to late March, early April, we have the way that MVI is set up, we have community site partners. And so we have about 10 community site partners that actually covers about 18 communities within the Chicago metropolitan area, including one that is outside of Chicago, which is a suburb called Waukegan. We came together in a Zoom, like everyone is doing now, to really talk about what impact this was going to have, because many of our community site partners, they're on the ground. So they are engaging veterans on a day-to-day basis. They're hosting physical activities, they're connecting them to services, and we knew that all of that was going to stop. So what we needed to do was to figure out how best they could continue to serve. And amazingly, our partners were able to quickly shift to what we call backdoor services. So many of them were providing care packages because we have a lot of food insecurity among the veterans that we serve. And they were able to assemble and continue that service, but only do it in a physical distinct way. So instead of them come into the sites, the veterans would come to the back door, they would hand them their meals and do a brief verbal check-in. We had other sites that decided what they would continue to do would be follow up via phone call, just to check in. Other sites said, well, you know, let's try to figure out if we can connect virtually. So they did this whole assessment to see who had access to internet so that we would not lose. And out of that, though, what we heard from veterans was the importance of at least staying connected in some way, because what they were feeling was as if they were in war again. And the isolation has become really, really huge. Fortunately, we haven't lost anyone to death by suicide. But we do see the isolation. We do see the escalating anxiety rates among veterans. And because our veterans are older, this really triggers a lot for them. You know, many of them are Vietnam War vets that have pre-existing issues anyway. And so this puts them at higher risk because of COVID. Many of them may be also victims of Agent Orange with a whole lot of host of other physical issues. So COVID-19 has challenged us to really think innovatively of how we remain connected to veterans and their families and connecting them to services, and then how we also connect with our broader veteran partners within the Chicagoland area to make sure that veterans get the services they need, because VA shut down. So they didn't have access to the mental health services on a regular basis as well. So we've been trying to fill in the gap with the services. Many of our site partners are clinicians, and so they have the capacity to connect with them and offer at least a framework for veterans to check in so that the anxiety and the trauma that they are experiencing doesn't tip them over the edge.
Thank you for explaining all of that and for your service. You've spoken a lot about the impact on veterans in your program. I'm wondering if from your experience, that's a good picture of what you're hearing overall for all veterans generally in the U.S., or if there's other specific ways that the veteran population is being impacted.
No, I think what we're hearing overall across the U.S. is that veterans are feeling like they're in wartime. And that's having triggers for many of them. And every veteran is different. I mean, it's very individualized in terms of how they respond with their transition, where they are on the transition scale, if you will. I think for many veterans, particularly those that were gainfully employed and lost their job. In one particular instance, we got a phone call from an individual who was in California. And he got laid off due to COVID, was a veteran, spiraled out of control. We actually received the phone call from a family member because they were trying to connect him with services. Unfortunately, what ended up happening, the police got involved. They took him to hospital for services and kept him in under the normal 72-hour hold. I guess he wasn't being compliant or whatever, and so they discharged him. It wasn't a VA facility. They discharged him. Fast forward, he ends up in Atlanta, but he's spiraling out of control. So what we tried to do, even though long distance, was to utilize our relationships within the VA system to connect the family to some services outside of the state that could get him connected immediately, because he was getting ready to go over the edge. And so we're hearing this from around the country. It's the anxiety, it is the isolation. And this is an individual, a younger vet, post 9/11, so he hadn't been out the service terribly long, But what we do know that we see normal transition issues for veterans begin to surface about 3 to 4 years after they have been transitioned out of active duty. And so this fell within that time frame. Families don't know what to do. And it's very, very difficult to get them connected to service. So as a result, we're in the process now of planning a veteran family seminar that is designed to just kind of walk families through what to look for and what's and how to get connected to the services that could possibly save a veteran's life.
So I think that's a great segue into our last question for this podcast, which is we like to end by asking, what can individuals do to further help veterans in their own communities?
I think just show up and be available. Listen, one, our automatic response to veterans is thank you for your service. And as I've often said, what's the implication of that? What are we really saying to them when we say thank you for your service, given the context of what the military does? And what we've heard from veterans is that they don't want to be thanked for their service, because in thanking them, what you're really sanctioning is that we've killed people. They're trying to reconcile that. It's a moral conflict for them. So one, how can I be of service to you? Is, I think, a better approach to it. And then also, we see our program as a national model. So are there other communities that want to create community spaces for veterans and their families to come and connect with one another, to really try to understand what are the services that are accessible in the community? Every veteran cannot go to the VA. Every veteran does not want to go to the VA. It's a very complex issue. So what is the community's response? We operate off of an asset-based community methodology, and the community has tremendous assets. Veterans are an asset. What are some of the issues that in the community that veterans can connect to? Because what they are really wanting to do is continue their mission, and their mission is to be of service. So how do we as communities create opportunities that tap into the rich resources and talents that veterans bring to the table? And I think that's how people get engaged.
Thank you so much for doing this podcast today, for the on-the-ground information and your experience, as well as some really thought-provoking ideas of what we can all do in order to better ease transitions and help our community, including our veterans. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.